Chapter 31, Dream Topping. Ever since calories and sugar intake were discovered, the realm of the pudding has suffered intensely. There was a day when one could honestly and innocently enjoy the sheer pleasure of a good sticky toffee pudding. When ice cream was nice cream and Bakewell tart really was baked well. Tastes change, though, and the world of the sweet has often been sour, having to go through some dramatic overhaulage in order to keep pace. Whilst a straightforward sausage and a common kedgeree maintain their hold on a nation's culinary choices, the pudding has to stay on its toes to tantalise our taste buds. From low-fat through to no-fat, from sugar-free through to taste-free, what the next stage is we can only wait and see. Syllabub, don't desert your desserts. I peered cautiously from the window as I ate my breakfast and could see a black Spec Ops Packard on the street corner, doubtless waiting for me to make an appearance. Across the road from them was another car, this time the unmistakable deep blue of Goliath. Mr. Cheese leaned against the bonnet, smoking. I switched on the telly and caught the news. The break-in at Vold Towers had been heavily censored, but it was reported that an unknown agency had gained entrance to the building, killed a number of SO14 agents, and made off with Cardenio. Lord Volskamper had been interviewed and maintained that he had been sound asleep and knew nothing. Yorick Kane was still reported as missing, and early exit polls from the day's election had shown that Kane and the Whigs had not to have lived up to expectations. Without Cardenio, the powerful Shakespeare lobby had returned their allegiances to the current administration, who had promised to postpone, with the help of the Chronogard, the 18th century demolition of Shakespeare's old Stratford home. I allowed myself a wry smile at Kane's dramatic fall, but felt sorry for the officers who had had to face the questing beast. I walked through to the kitchen. Pickwick looked at me and then at her empty supper dish with an accusing air. "Sorry," I muttered as I poured her some dried fruit. "How's the egg?" "Plock, plock," said Pickwick. "Well," I replied, "suit yourself. I was only asking." I made another cup of tea and sat down to have a think. Dad had said the world was going to end this evening, but whether that was really going to happen or not, I had no idea. As for me, I was wanted by Spec Ops and Goliath. I was going to have to either outwit them or lie very low for a long time. I spent most of the day pacing my apartment, trying to figure out the best course of action. I wrote out my account of what had happened and hid it behind the fridge just in case. I expected Dad to turn up, but the hours ticked by and everything carried on as normal. The Goliath and Spec Ops vehicles were relieved by two others at midday, and as dusk drew on, I became more desperate. I couldn't stay trapped inside my own apartment forever. Bowden and Joffy I could trust, and perhaps Miles too. I elected to sneak out and use a public phone box to call Bowden, and was just about to open the door when someone pressed the intercom buzzer downstairs. I quickly ducked out of my apartment and started to run down the staircase. If I reached the bottom and made my way through the service entrance, I might be able to slip away. Then, disaster. One of the tenants was about to leave at that precise moment and open the door for whoever it was. I heard a brusque voice.
"Here for Miss next, Spec Ops."
I cursed Mrs. Scroggings as she replied, "Fourth floor, second on the left." The fire escape was out the front in full view of Spec Ops and Goliath, so I ran all the way back upstairs to my flat only to find that in my hurry I had locked myself out. There was nowhere to hide except behind a potted rubber plant about seven sizes too small. So I pushed open the letterbox and hissed, "Pickwick!" She wandered out into the hall from the living room and stared at me, head cocked on one side. "Good. Now listen. I know that Landon said you were really bright, and if you don't do this, I'm going to be looped and you're going to be put in a zoo. Now, I need you to find my keys." Pickwick stared at me dubiously, took two steps closer, and then relaxed and plucked a bit. "Yes, yes, it's me. All the marshmallows you can eat, Pickers, but I need my keys, my keys." Pickwick obediently stood on one leg. "Shit," I muttered. "Ah, next," said a voice behind me. I stopped, rested my head against the door, and let the letterbox snap shut. Hello, Cordelia, I said softly without turning round.
Well, you have been giving us the runaround, haven't you?
I paused, turned and stood up. But Cordelia wasn't with any other Spec Ops types. She was with a man and his young daughter, the winners of her competition. Perhaps things were not quite as bad as I had thought. I put my arm around her shoulder and walked her out of earshot.
Cordelia.
Dilly.
Dilly.
Yes, Thurs. What's the word over at Spec Ops?
Well, darling, answered Cordelia. The order for your arrest is still only within Spec Ops. Flanker is hoping you'll give yourself up. Goliath are telling anyone who will listen that you stole some highly sensitive industrial secrets.
It's all bullshit, Cordelia.
I know that, Thursday, but I've got a job to do. Are you going to meet my people now?
I had nothing to lose, so we returned to where the two of them were looking at a brochure for the gravitube.
Thursday next. This is David Graham and his daughter Molly.
I shook hands with David. Molly stared at me from behind his leg a bit dubiously, clutching a soft toy. I'd invite you in for a coffee, I explained, but I've locked myself out. David rummaged in his pocket and produced a set of keys.
Are these yours? I found them on the path outside.
I don't think that's very likely. But they were my keys. A set I had lost a few days earlier. I unlocked the door.
Come on in, that's Pickwick.
Stay away from the windows, there are a few people I don't want to meet outside. They shut the door behind them. Molly, overcoming her initial shyness, stared at Pickwick, who stared back.
Plock,
said Pickwick.
Dodo,
said Molly. Pickwick grasped Molly by the cuff and led her into the kitchen to show off her egg.
What do you do, David?
I asked as I looked out of the kitchen window. I needn't have worried. The two cars and their occupants were in the same place.
I'm a fundraiser, he replied. I've wanted to meet you for some time.
Why?
He shrugged. Dunno. Interested to see the sort of person who can travel around in books, I guess.
Ah, I replied absently, pausing to consider just how wholly unlikely it was that Cordelia's guest had found my keys when other passing residents had missed them.
Can I ask you a question, Miss Next? Asked David.
Call me Thursday. Hang on a minute. I nipped into the living room to fetch the entroposcope and shook it as I walked back in.
Well, Thursday, continued David, I was wondering...
Shit!
I exclaimed, looking at the swirling pattern within the rice and lentils.
It's happening again.
Your Dodo says she's hungry,
observed Molly.
It's a scam for a marshmallow, I replied absently.
Cordelia, would you give Molly a marshmallow to feed to Pickwick? They're on top of the fridge. Cordelia put down her bag and reached up for the glass jar.
Sorry, David, you were saying?
Here it is. How did...
But I wasn't listening. I was looking out of the kitchen window. Below me, sitting on the wall at the entrance to the apartment block, was a woman in her mid-twenties. She was dressed in the Thursday Next look and was reading a fashion magazine.
Aeonis,
I whispered.
Can you hear me?
The figure turned to look at me as I said the words, and my scalp prickled. It was her, no doubt about it. She smiled, waved, and pointed to her watch.
It's her,
I mumbled.
Goddamned son of a bitch, it's her.
And that's my question, concluded David.
I'm sorry, David, I wasn't listening. I shook the entroposcope, but the pulses were no more patterned than before. Whatever the danger was, we weren't quite there yet.
You had a question, David?
Yes, he said, exasperated by my inattention. I was wondering...
Look out!
I shouted, but it was too late. The glass marshmallow jar had slipped from Cordelia's grasp and fell heavily on the worktop, right on top of the small evidence bag full of the pink goo from beyond the end of the world. The jar didn't break, but the bag did, and Cordelia, me, and David were sprayed in gooey slime. David got the worst of it. A huge gob went right in his face.
Ugh!
Here, I said, handing him a Seven Wonders of Swindon tea towel. Use this.
What is that gick?
Asked Cordelia, dabbing at her clothes with a damp cloth. I wish I knew. But David licked his lips and said,
I'll tell you what this is. It's dream topping.
Dream topping? I queried. Are you sure?
Yes, strawberry flavour. Know it anywhere.
I put a finger in the goo and tasted it. No mistake. It was dream topping. If only forensics had looked at the big picture instead of staring at molecules, they might have figured it out for themselves. But it got me thinking. Dream topping? I wondered out loud, looking at my watch. There were 87 minutes of life left on the planet. How could the world turn to dream topping?
It's the sort of thing, piped up David, that Mycroft might know.
You, I said, pointing a finger at the pudding-covered individual, are a genius. What had Mycroft said before he left about his R&D work at Constuff? Miniaturized nanomachines barely bigger than a cell, building food protein out of nothing more than garbage. Banoffee pie from landfills? Perhaps there was going to be an accident. After all, what stopped nanomachines from making banoffee pie once they had started? I looked out of the window. Aeonis had gone. Do you have a car? I asked.
Sure,
said David. You're going to have to take me over to Constuff. Dilly, I need your clothes. Cordelia looked suspicious.
Why?
I've got watchers. Three in, three out. They'll think I'm you.
No way on earth,
replied Cordelia indignantly, unless you agree to do all my interviews and press junkets. At my first appearance, I'll have my head lopped off by Goliath or Specops, or both.
Perhaps that's so, replied Cordelia slowly. But I'd be a fool to pass on an opportunity as good as this. All the interviews and appearances I request for a year.
2 months, Cordelia.
Six. Three. Okay, she sighed. 3 months, but you have to do the Thursday Next workout video and talk to Harry about the Air Affair film project.
Deal. So Cordelia and I switched clothes. It felt very odd to be wearing her large pink sweater, short black skirt and high heels.
Don't forget the Peruvian love beads, said Cordelia. And my gun, here.
Molly and Pickwick were playing hide-and-seek in the living room, but were soon rounded up.
Excuse me, Miss Flack, said David in a slightly indignant tone. You promised I could ask Miss Next a question.
Flack pointed a finely manicured fingertip at him and narrowed her eyes.
Listen here, Buster. You're on Spec Ops business right now. A bonus, I'd say. Any complaints?
No, I guess not, stammered David.
I led them outside, past the Goliath and Spec Ops agents waiting for me. I made some expansive Cordelia-like moves, and they barely gave us a second glance. We were soon in David's hired Studebaker, and I directed him across town as I switched back to my own clothes.
Thursday?
Asked David. Yes, I replied, looking around to see if I could see Aeonis and shaking the entroposcope. Entropy seemed to be holding the slightly odd mark.
Your father? How does he manage to stop the clock like he does?
It's a chronoguard thing, I told him. Any activity in the time stream gives off ripples that are easily detected. Dad places us both in a sort of stasis. As soon as the chronos pick up a disturbance, he's already gone. Does that answer your question?
I guess.
Good. Okay, pull up over there. I'll walk the rest of the way. They dropped me by the side of the road, and I thanked them before running up the street. It was already quite dark and the street lamps were on. It didn't look like the world was about to end in 26 minutes, but then I don't suppose it ever does.